Welcome to the Retail Reality Show.
Welcome to another episode from the Retail Reality Show. My name is Martin and I'm very happy to record this new session. And across from me is Nino from Salesforce. How are you doing? Everything good?
Hello. How can you sit across from someone virtually?
Well, at least you're on metaverse. My screen across from me.
We're in the metaverse. Yes. Thank you, everyone. And also Happy New Year from my end. So I think it's our first show this year. And we spend a lot of time on looking ahead what the 2024 year brings for us. And we brainstormed a lot. We strategized a lot. And we have a great roadmap for the Retail Reality Show. Today, it's a very big pleasure for us to have Milena Lazarevska from Delivery Hero with us. Milena is SVP, Quick Commerce, and she has a wealth of experience in grocery. Amongst others, she worked for Sainsbury's in the UK, but she will introduce herself in a bit. Before we continue, and if you don't know Delivery Hero, you should just Google it. It's a great company. Its origin is from Germany, if I'm not completely wrong. Yes, Milena is nodding. And Delivery Hero is an online ordering and delivery platform for meals, groceries, and everyday goods. And the company operates worldwide. Home market is Germany, under different brands. So which brands, we will go into more detail in a bit. But before I talk too much, I want to give the stage to Milena. Milena, you want to quickly say hello to our audience?
Hi, Bose. Very happy to be here. Thank you for having me on the show. So quickly about me and maybe a little bit more about Delivery Hero. So Nino has just very kindly introduced me. I lead the global quick commerce team for Delivery Hero. I've been with the company since August 2020, and we started the quick commerce business in mid to late 2019, so not long after we started it. And as you said, Delivery Hero is one of the largest global delivery companies. The core of our business and still the largest part of our business is restaurant food delivery. But since 2019, we've also been doing groceries and other kind of everyday goods delivery, partly through our own what we call dark stores. And I think this is the model that in Germany got popularized with Gorillas and Flink and some of the other players, but also through a marketplace model where we partner with local retailers, supermarkets, pharmacies, convenience stores, also some electronic stores actually, and deliver goods to our customers from those stores. Everything happening within 25 to 30 minutes. It varies a little bit country by country, and very successfully grown the business to be a pretty significant part of Delivery Hero now.
Cool. So that means in the future, or because I'm in Germany, based in Munich, and I think you're not delivering anything here but food, right? And meals?
No, actually, we don't deliver anything in Germany. We exited the market a couple years ago. We had a re-entry for a very short time, and then 2022 happened. The stock market collapsed a little bit. It was a bit too big of an investment to go through the German market, so we ended up closing operations again. So we have a head office, a headquarters in Berlin, which is where our largest software engineers population is as well, where we build a lot of the technology to operate the business. We don't actually have operations in Germany.
Okay. I'm jealous for the other countries because I would love to get my new, I don't know, Apple Watch, iPhone from MediaMarkt, for example, in 25 minutes. So
indeed.
Cool. Nice. Okay, Milena. So maybe before we jump into the topics and have the great pleasure to ask you some specific questions, maybe we can do a little icebreaker before we do that. Just a couple of questions, quick questions, where we like to hear your answer. So what would you say, food delivery or supermarket?
I'd say grocery delivery.
Grocery delivery. Okay. Yeah. True. Yeah. Maybe that comparison makes more sense. Okay. So you would do you'd rather have it delivered than go into the supermarket.
I would.
Okay.
But it's also telling if you would have said food delivery, then you don't like to cook yourself. So, so you like to cook.
I do. I also like food delivery every now and then, but I like to cook myself too.
Okay. And then next question would be Berlin or Amsterdam?
Oh, it's a tough one. I like both cities, but I'll have to go with Berlin.
Ah, okay. We like that answer. And pizza or burger?
burger for me.
Okay, nice. And is it the vegan option or is it the original style?
It is the original style. I do try to limit my red meat intake for environmental reasons, but I do like a good burger occasionally.
Nice, nice. No judgment at all. Nino, I don't know how about you, but I usually go for the original style as well.
Likewise, I tend to eat very less meat since years, but at the weekend, it's a pleasure to eat a piece of meat or a burger, and not raw, but medium. Yeah. I would go for a burger medium.
Agreed.
Great. So let's hope we don't get a shitstorm for our type of choice for the burger, but I hope some people can relate. Okay, over to you, Nino, and thanks, Milena, for the quick answers. And then let's dive into the next topics.
Sure. We already learned a little bit about Delivery Hero. Thanks for that, Milena. Quick commerce, you already said you started this business in 2019. I think it was right before the pandemic, and I myself did my first quick commerce order with Gorillas during the pandemic. I still remember I was in a Clubhouse chat. Not sure if do you remember
Clubhouse? Yeah.
Yeah.
The platform that wasn't afterwards.
Exactly. It died afterwards. But I was in a Clubhouse chat with a friend, and then we chatted about quick commerce and loads of followers, and then I thought, let's try it. And then during the chat during the talk at Clubhouse, I tried it, and then they delivered within, I think, 10 minutes. That was quite...
pretty wow.
quite impressive. And I thought, how do they make this work? So my first question would rather be very broad, because I think lots of people haven't heard about quick commerce. How does it work? What's the business model behind?
Yeah, so let me maybe first just mention a few of our brands, because I realized I didn't mention that in the introduction. And I'm sure the listeners, if they don't know Delivery Hero, and actually not many people do because we're not really a household brand as Delivery Hero, but hopefully they will know some of the operating brands. So in Europe, we have Foodora, mostly in the Nordics and some of Eastern Europe. We have Glovo that covers Europe, North Africa, and then Eastern Europe and further. And Yemek Sepeti in Turkey, eFood in Greece. We have Talabat in the Middle East, Foodpanda in Asia, Wooa in Korea. That's our largest brand that we have. Pedidosja in South America, Hunger Station in Saudi, and InstaShop also in Dubai and in Egypt now. So 10 different brands and entities that operate in over 70 countries around the world. All of them have quick commerce. We operate two quite different business models, actually. As a consumer, you may not notice, because as a consumer, you get the choice of groceries and other verticals. So like I said earlier, we have pharmacies and beauty. Some of the markets are quite strong on electronics, flowers, especially coming up to Valentine's Day. We have a big spike in flower ordering. So as a consumer, you may not notice, but as a business, the two different business lines are the dark stores. So what Gorillas had in Germany, mm-hmm. And also the marketplace model. So where we partner with existing retailers and deliver on their behalf. Dark stores are our own owned warehouses that are somewhat small, 250 to 500 square meters kind of size. Used to have somewhat limited assortment. Over the last 3-4 years, we've really grown the assortment that we offer out of the dark stores. And it is quite comparable to a supermarket, actually. So in our largest stores, or the most dense ones, we have over 10,000 items. 10,000 items is what you would find in a normal size Rewe or Edeka in sort of the big supermarkets in Germany. Mm-hmm. Some of our other stores offer kind of 4,000 to 5,000 items. This is even more than what a city center Rewe or Edeka would actually offer. So quite a lot of assortment, mostly types of products that you would find in the supermarket. But again, we also offer some general merchandise and flowers also out of the dark stores. And then the marketplace model, we partner with loved retailers from the local neighborhood. A lot of those are supermarkets. So we'll partner with the likes of Carrefour or Lulu quite a few other retailers around the world. Lots of flower stores and some kind of loved, very local brands as well. And we use our delivery fleet that we also use for restaurants. So this is kind of a big positive. I know we'll talk a little bit about the unit economics of the model later as well. But to consumers, we're one platform. They can order food, they can order groceries, they can order other items. And for riders, we actually provide various places where they can deliver orders from. It can be from a restaurant, from one of our dark stores, or from shops. And of course, we use our whole fleet in order to deliver, and we always deliver on demand and within 20 to 30, sometimes 40 minutes, depending on which market, how much supply we have, what differences we drive, distances mm-hmm. we drive, etc.
So the same person might pick up a pizza and then drive to the next electronics market, put the iPhone on top, and then deliver the two.
Yes, we do stacking across as well. Mm-hmm. It's one of the ways that we look to improve the unit economics as well. We always make sure things are segregated, so your iPhone doesn't smell of pizza when it arrives to your house. Don't worry. But yes, it can be the same rider in one drop or in multiple drops.
Okay. And you already mentioned unit economics. We will go a little bit into more detail in a bit. But in general, how do you make money? How you run quick commerce?
So the two models also have two different ways of making money. In our dark stores, we buy goods from suppliers. We're a normal retailer. We buy goods from suppliers. We put a markup on those goods. That is our gross margin. And we pay for the operations of the store, for the picking and packing operations, for the delivery, and the difference, I guess, between the money that we get from customers and all of the costs that we have is how we make the money. On the marketplace side, we take a commission rate. So it's much more similar to restaurants. We take a commission rate from the retailers based on the what type of retailer it is, how much assortment it's offering, various other factors. We also, in both models, of course, have a delivery fee, which is often discounted if a customer is a subscriber or not, whatever kind of free delivery or discounted delivery options they have access to. And then finally, and what is quite important for the profitability of the overall model and of the company in general, is our partnerships with advertisers. So in both dark stores and local shops, we sell lots of consumer brands, consumer packaged goods, and we're also developing a retail media business. So to make sure those brands can reach the relevant customers on our platforms to advertise their items to them and to make sure that customers discover and buy their items. And we, of course, sell advertising space on the apps as well.
Got it. So I think that's, as I said, we will go later into this. This will be also one mean to get profitable as a quick commerce provider. And I'm sure you also have thought about white label or own products, right?
We have. Early stages when it comes to private label. But we already have actually quite a decent private label assortment in our Foodpanda entity, especially Singapore, Malaysia, Hong Kong, I think a few other countries in Asia as well, across fresh products, dairy products, snacks, so quite a wide range. We are by no means as advanced as the Western European supermarkets when it comes to private label. And actually, when we first started thinking about private label, one discovery for me, because I've only ever worked in Western Europe before, was that in Western Europe, retailers, especially grocery retailers, have up to 50% of their sales come from private label. It's really not the case in most other places in the world. It's single digits, if low double digit, kind of in the teens contribution from private label. So brands have a much stronger hold, which is why we haven't really focused so much on private label yet. But we do see this as one of the avenues to expand margins in our dark stores. And
I heard Aldi and Lidl are doing this quite well.
Exactly. 100% contribution from private label.
I think 80 or 90% is private label.
Yeah.
In Aldi. I forgot the exact number, but crazy. But I think great opportunity for sure for you.
Indeed.
Cool. Okay. So let's maybe jump into the next topics, Milena. Maybe you can help me out time-wise. So did this new service of quick commerce hit right before COVID or as a response of COVID, looking into consumer behavior, et cetera?
It was actually before. So we saw the opportunity for this as a business and as a benefit that we bring to our customers much before already. So early 2019, I think we started already partnering with supermarkets and other retailers, because of course that's much more similar to our restaurant model as well, where we partner with an existing partner and then just deliver on their behalf. But already mid to late 2019, we opened the first dark stores. Between Kuwait and Turkey, we already had quite a few dark stores. Now, when 2020 hit, we already had big expansion targets, and I think it just poured fuel on everything. And we went really quickly through 2020 to expand pretty much in all of our markets.
So how did the consumer engagement change prior to COVID and then during COVID in terms of this quickness of the delivery of the food? Because I can imagine, especially in times of COVID, where maybe you're sitting at home and it's a whole different setting for yourself, it's even more interesting to get things delivered that quickly. And I remember new brands coming on the market like Gorillas, Flink, etc., that did have this specific punchline of getting your things delivered within 10 minutes, where people were like, oh my God, this sounds crazy. Maybe I'm just going to try it out just to see if they really are able to make it. So maybe you can touch upon this on the perception of the users of and also these benefits that are coming with quick commerce.
Yeah. Look, COVID was was no doubt a massive accelerator to our industry. I don't think we would be where we are today. E-commerce groceries in general wouldn't be where we are today if it wasn't for COVID, because everybody that was delivering home got a boost. Yeah. Now, what I've been quite impressed with is just how quickly we've grown quick commerce and how much that growth is actually sustained. Mm-hmm. So we released our preliminary 2023 results just a couple of days ago. We don't yet disclose the growth of quick commerce, but I can tell you it's close to 30%. This is 2023 on 2022 growth. Mm-hmm. And there is no more COVID. There are no more restrictions. And 2022 still had some tough comparables because a lot of the Asian markets still had lockdowns coming into 2022 as well. So yes, COVID is a big accelerator, and back to the consumer sentiment and kind of the value that this is bringing, consumers are clearly absolutely loving this proposition. Mm-hmm. And they are continuing to buy. And we see from our customer cohorts, people come back and buy more over time. So someone that we acquired as a new customer in January 2022 and made one order a month, by December 2022 or by December 2023, they're making multiple orders a month. They're buying from multiple categories. They're buying from multiple vendors. They discover that we can serve all sorts of missions in their life. Mm-hmm. We remove the aspect of planning. I'm sure we all know you write down the very long list of the things you need from the supermarket, and you either go on the website and you spend an hour building your big basket, or you go to the supermarket and you walk around for an hour. If you can't have a kid, I don't even want to imagine what it's like to do that activity. And then you forget something. Of course, you always forget something.
I am this person.
Yeah. What we're seeing customers are actually doing is that they're buying more frequently, but slightly smaller baskets. So we don't see the 100 euro baskets. And I think you'll see a lot of the critics of this model, especially when they say it's never going to work financially, are always talking about how small the baskets are. And yes, the baskets are not very big, but we get customers to shop more frequently. So actually what we're seeing happen is the big monthly shop or even the big weekly shop gets broken down in 2-3. So you're topping up and you're getting the things you need for the next 2-3 days or maximum for the next week. And then you buy more frequently because you don't need to plan. You don't need to think very far ahead. And I think that's a huge benefit for consumers and why they keep coming back to shop with us.
So it's basically acquisition costs and then pushing them to get the second order from the consumers, and then you can already predict probably the customer lifetime value.
Exactly. And especially when we get people to start buying fresh produce, so fruits and vegetables or chilled goods like dairy, cheese, yogurt, etc. These are very high frequency purchases, and they tend to be basket starters. And the people that start buying these from us and are happy with that experience that delivery are our most valuable customers as well.
Makes sense. Maybe just because Martin also mentioned Gorillas and Flink, how does the market look today? So now it's we are out of COVID, and you said quick commerce is growing close to 30% on your end without disclosing the exact number. What happened to the others? Or maybe can you, if you zoom out, how many players are left there? Because I think there was also big, big venture money during COVID, where I think this winner takes it all mentality happened, where they tried to grow as fast as possible, and some of them didn't make it, and they're now gone. So maybe if you can just give us a quick overview how this looks like today.
So the players that didn't make it were mostly the standalone dark store players, because that is by far the most CapEx intensive and from a unit economics perspective, the most challenging model, especially if you look at Western Europe and the US. Gopuff is still around. There are still a couple of standalone players. I mean, Flink is still around, of course. Getir is still around and a couple of smaller ones that I know in London. But I don't know of any other standalone dark store quick commerce player that is of a significant size that has actually stayed. Who has made it, though, and who has made it quite successfully are platforms like us that actually combine multiple different products for delivery. So food platform with grocery delivery, expanding into some other categories as well. DoorDash is doing well. Uber Eats is doing well with their grocery proposition too. And we have some regional competition with Rappi, with Grab, Noon in the Middle East, somewhat Deliveroo in the Middle East as well. So a lot of those platforms, I think, are doing well. I'm not sure they're doing as well as us. I do think we are doing quite well in most of our markets and winning the markets in most of our markets. But there is some worthy competition out there that we need to keep an eye on. However, I do consider supermarkets or shopping, offline shopping in supermarkets, our largest competition. That's our market, especially when it comes to grocery delivery. We're still a tiny proportion in e-commerce, and a lot of our markets is a tiny proportion of what people spend on groceries. It's still huge, huge potential for us to get more people to shop online and some of those occasions to be with quick commerce. I do believe we're going to take the largest share of e-commerce groceries going forward. But yeah, lots of potential there. It's, if I remember correctly, just in our addressable market, so where we play, it's a over 1.5 trillion euro industry. Wow. Just groceries. We're not even talking pharmacies, flowers, all the other verticals I mentioned.
How big is the percentage of lifestyle products? Do you know that compared to food and groceries and like drugstore things? Because with Blank, we have a big focus on lifestyle products that are slightly more expensive as well. So I'm curious to see if people already picked on to the service of also getting maybe fashion or shoes or, I don't know. We were talking about electronics, headphones, iPhones, whatever. Like, do you know the percentage of this roundabout?
It's small. It's single digit as a contribution and low single digit from all of our sales. Groceries is by far the largest category that we play in. But we do see spikes on certain customer events. Like we had a very big spike because Wuwa, our Korean entity, had a partnership with Apple for the release of the new iPhone, and we had a huge spike in sales. Valentine's Day, we see a huge spike in flowers and premium chocolate delivery. But on a normal kind of day-to-day basis, really, our top-selling products are bananas, beer, snacks, and other fruits and vegetables. And okay. In APAC, it's quite a lot of milk too that we sell.
Interesting. You should release that. You should have a dashboard where you anonymize and where you just show what's trending every day.
Indeed.
At Salesforce, we do that. We have the shopping index. Maybe you've seen it. And it's also a generalization of what's happening in e-com across our platform. And that's quite interesting. Yeah? So average order value across a category or conversion rates. So if you're a business, like a fashion business, you can compare yourself to the baseline. So I'm looking forward to the Delivery Hero What's Selling website.
White paper.
What would be really interesting is because we, I'm one of those. Yeah? Convenience is big, and we bought recently a Thermomix, and I tried also HelloFresh, and they have now a subscription that is almost not directly connected to the Thermomix, but at least it's adjusted. So they give you the recipe, and then you just have to click next, and you put in the Thermomix what you put out of the HelloFresh parcel. So it's like a cooking with like an iPhone for cooking. What I would be really interested in who is ordering with the quick commerce players. If you can give us a little bit insights, is it like me? Yeah, so like the mid-age guy? Is it rather Gen Zers? Is it millennials? Would be really interesting to get a little bit of an insights into you, into the average buyer.
Yeah. It's a bit of a mix, and it's not actually that much of a dissimilar profile to those that order restaurant food on our platforms as well. That is the customer pool that we tap into, and then we try to cross-sell quick commerce mostly to those customers. But it does tend to be young adults, right? So past school, definitely into university, when people start having some own of their money to spend. And it doesn't push much past 50, 55 years. I think the majority of our customers are between the 20 and 40 year bracket. But it's a mix of men and women. I was actually expecting a lot more women to be shopping on quick commerce because that tends to be the general grocery shopper. And yes, we over-indexed a little bit on women, but I think it's a 60-40 split. It's not actually as drastic a split as I expected it to be, which is also very interesting. And then we have people using us for different occasions. Some come in the evenings and they buy beer and snacks on a regular basis. Some buy from all sorts of categories and they come back really frequently. We actually have people that come to us in the morning for kind of breakfast foods plus whatever they need through the day or for the next few days. So quite a few occasions. And it varies a little bit country by country, of course, where we are. But I think it's applicable to the general urban population. We, of course, tend to be in urban populations. And we're really working hard on making the service as affordable as we can and therefore make it as accessible as we can for everybody. Because especially when it comes to our marketplace business, it's the same prices as in store, by and large. And in our dark stores, we try to be quite competitively priced to the relevant supermarket in that particular country. Now, of course, for smaller baskets, there are delivery fees and other fees associated with those baskets. But once customers become pro customers, or if they pass a certain basket threshold, they also get a free delivery. So that shouldn't be a barrier for many customers to be buying from us as well.
Mm. I was really surprised during COVID. I was ordering a few times with Gorillas, and I was really surprised that it's, as like you said, it's very comparable to a supermarket. Obviously, you pay a premium for delivery, but also not too much. I think it was 2 to 3 euros, but the prices were similar. I ordered also bananas. I ordered beer, for example, in the evening. And it was surprisingly cheap.
Beer and bananas. Nice combination.
These are such frequently bought items and occasions that unless we're affordable, we're becoming a very niche service. And this business doesn't work with low numbers of customers, especially when it comes to the dark stores. I mean, obviously, one lever for profitability for us is getting the basket sizes as big as possible, because that's how the unit economics work. But to make a store profitable, we need to have as many customers ordering as many times from that specific store, because otherwise we can't dilute the fixed and semi-fixed costs of the store. The people that work inside that are doing the picking and packing of the orders, the rent of the store, the utilities and the capex that went into the store. So we have to make, this is a scale business. It's grocery retail. It really has to be a volume business. And to be a volume business, we must be affordable.
And is there any, because you mentioned it earlier, it's predominantly urban areas. I can imagine many of the listeners of this podcast are not living in Berlin, Munich, Hamburg, Cologne, or Zurich, or any other urban area. Is there any chance or any plan to also roll this out to smaller cities?
So we do have presence in some smaller cities, say Innsbruck in Austria, for example. I don't know how small of a city, there is a limit when it comes to the dark store model, how big an urban environment needs to be, how big our platform needs to be in terms of total customers that are actually buying with us, which again is determined by the size of the city. But it's not tiny. I mean, villages, absolutely not. But I think cities of 200,000, 500,000 people, absolutely. This is a very viable proposition there. When it comes to our marketplace business, I think that is a much more widely applicable, because if there is a local store, we can deliver from that local store. Our costs are the rider costs, the delivery costs. And then we help bring additional business for that physical store as well by providing some online orders.
Mm-hmm. Just wondering, Milena, that popped in my head, because I heard this in a different podcast for a different context, but do you guys also do flash sales and stuff like this when you, for example, see that the minimum date range of a certain food product is running out maybe in a couple of months? Yeah, did you say, okay, let's shoot these products out to the consumer maybe for a discount and then just to get it out of the stock? Is this something that you do?
Absolutely. I think with the speed at which we expanded, especially the dark stores, what we call the D-marts, it's not like we made 100% correct assortment decisions, as in we decided to stock an item that for sure sells. We've made a few mistakes on the way, so we always had to correct our mistakes and then sell off or even donate in some cases the stock that we had left over. So we did quite a bit of this in quite a few countries. It's becoming a little bit less how much we have to do this because we're becoming more mature. We're making much better assortment decisions. We have our own data now to base the assortment decisions on what might sell, what might not sell in every particular dark store. But what we do is interesting events for customers always. We have, for example, in Food Panda, once a month, there is something called Panda Mart Day. So for that day, it's a big campaign. We get various brands to participate and we offer discounts to consumers. And they know that on this day, they will get really great discounts. We have discounts active on a regular basis, but for these bigger events, we have things that are a bit more special. A very big season for us in the Middle East is Ramadan. It's about to start, I think, in a couple weeks' time. And this has been now 3-4 months in the works to get special products, to get special discounts, to make sure we advertise this well to our customers too. And if it's anything last year is anything to go by, hopefully will give us a nice boost of growth for the rest of the year as well.
Interesting. Yeah. And maybe one additional question to this topic. Are also brands interested in doing specific placements of their products? For example, even sampling products just so people can try it out for free maybe. And then if they like it, the next time they order it?
Absolutely. We actually recently developed that functionality where we can sample products to customers. So we're rolling that out to our entities. It's been a highly demanded feature from all of our brand partners so far.
Cool. Interesting.
Another retail media angle.
Yeah.
And I think you mentioned it already, the treasure trove of data you're generating. I think that's gold in the future. The more you deliver, the more data you have that you can also monetize.
Absolutely. And we do, I think there is data that is just good practice to share with our partners. And there is data that is very valuable because it gives our brand partners a lot of insights about how they can grow on the platform, which customers they should target, sometimes even whether the assortment is correct and whether they offer us a different selection of items that they produce, how to speak to consumers. Very valuable. And we already have a lot of partnerships with our brand partners, both on data sharing and on media.
Cool. Very interesting. I can see where this is going. I think this is the golden question for many of those businesses, how to make this a profitable business. I remember in right after COVID, there was in the Manager magazine, like a big German publication, it said cash burn. And I have it now in front of me. So it said cash burn and average basket it was kind of a breakdown of the business model. And at this time, I think it was Gorillas. And it said average basket was 21.50 euros. and then you have €1.80 delivery fees, and then the cost of the goods were €15, so €21.50 plus €1.80 is €23.30 minus €15.10, which is the cost of the goods actually, minus the cost for delivery was €4.90, minus the work or the labor in the dark store. And then you have rent and like you said, the cost dilution that you put on top and break it down. And then you have marketing costs, which was 40 cents, which is, I think, very little. I was assuming more. And then it said in the end, €1.50 minus per order. So is that still valid? Or would you say, how does this look like in your world?
So the brand is accurate in the costs that go in there, absolutely. I think what is missing is advertising revenue, which of course boosts this as well. But by and large, the bridge is accurate in the elements that are there. And it's not far off from where I think all dark store players, I would say in Europe, started off from at the beginning. But there is a few levers to really improve this. So the first one on a unit economic basis is to grow the baskets. And €21.50 is now on the low side, even for baskets in Europe. We're seeing quite a bit higher for most of the European markets. You grow baskets by having a much better, much wider assortment that customers can choose from, making sure it's priced appropriately, right? What we were saying, it needs to be affordable. It can't be very expensive because you can offer the widest assortment possible. If it's very expensive, people aren't going to buy it. And you need attractive promotions every now and then. So growing the baskets, of course, improves your absolute unit economics. The delivery costs are another big area. And I think there's a couple of things we've done here. So the standalone players really went on this 10-minute delivery. And to guarantee a 10-minute delivery, you cannot stack any order. It has to go direct from store to customer, which makes it very expensive. I think the one thing we have learned over the last years is that 10 minutes is wow, but 20 minutes, 30 minutes is also relatively wow for a significantly smaller cost. So we've slowed down a little bit. I think we felt the pressure from the standalone players to deliver really fast. That was very expensive. Now that the pressure is a little off, I would say it's much more rational behavior. 25, 30, sometimes even 40-minute delivery is still significantly faster than any other e-commerce grocery delivery does. And it becomes quite a bit more affordable because we can stack orders. And then the other very big lever is getting sufficient orders into that store. And that dilutes both the staff costs within the store and all of the fixed costs like rent and CapEx and the utilities, et cetera. So what we announced mid last year is that in June, we actually, for the dark store business, we were contribution margin positive and we call it gross profit, but it's basically contribution margin. So including all the variable costs of an order, we broke even in June. We've been positive ever since. We are not yet on a global level EBITDA positive, and we don't yet, of course, then make cash from a Dmart business, but we're seeing a very clear path of how we actually get there. And this is globally. We already have individual countries, quite a few by now, that are EBITDA and cash positive and contributing to the business.
Wow.
This is the dark store model, right? The marketplace model, very different. It's a simple intake is delivery fee and commission rate. And then our costs are the delivery fee and, of course, the platform fees to run the business. This is a positive contributing business almost from the very beginning.
Because you have less investments, less CapEx. Got it. And I also felt €21.50 was quite low. And I think a recent research from Wyman, Oliver Wyman, said €31 in Germany, €29 in France, and Netherlands was €27. So I think you were already indicating that €21.50 is on the lower
end. Yeah,
lower
and I think €27 to €30 is a good estimate. Some retailers, some countries do significantly higher than that. But on average, I think in Europe, it's a decent estimate.
How's the average basket of a Rewe? Do you know by chance, or a Coop in Switzerland?
So I know that the average baskets online for these supermarkets are quite big. I think they're 70, 80 maybe. And I know this from the UK. In Sainsbury's, I think this is now quite a few years ago, but the average online baskets were closer to 100 pounds, which I think is the equivalent of 100 euros these days. So quite a bit bigger, but the supermarkets do use various incentives and sometimes barriers to make sure the baskets are that big. So in the UK, you couldn't order unless you ordered a minimum of 40 pounds. And after that, you started with paying high delivery fee, and with the higher basket, you got free or very low delivery fee. So they really incentivize a very big basket. For us, we mostly deliver on bikes, and bikes can also only take so much volume. So we don't necessarily want to encourage very big baskets. We're now seeing that customers are starting to buy much bigger baskets. So we're also exploring what sort of other fleet might we need. Do we need tricycles or like rickshaw type vehicles, or do we want cars in some countries, electric cars? We are minding our carbon footprint here too. But still, by and large, our fleet is bicycles or motorcycles, and there is a limit to how much they can take.
Interesting. I was just ChatGPTing, by the way, next to you spoke about the average basket in the UK, and it was with Lidl, and it's 74.58 British pounds.
And that's Lidl.
In October 2023, and that's Lidl.
Yeah. That's...
So probably closer to 100, what you said earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's also very sustainable. I always thought that when I saw quick commerce riders, Gorillas, and so on, they all have bikes. So I found that was very, like myself, when we moved out of Munich in December, and beforehand we had just an e-cargo bike from Amsterdam, Urban Arrow, and I thought that's really easy in a bigger urban area.
Indeed, it gets around much faster and also much more environmentally friendly. I'm just going to mention that while the maybe little and then the e-commerce orders of supermarkets are quite big, what I know for sure from supermarkets in the UK, their big growth channel was what they call the convenience stores. And these are city center located, slightly smaller assortment. So kind of not dissimilar to what we offer from the dark stores, actually. And the basket sizes, they are significantly lower, but customers buy much more frequently because they break up their big basket. And in the UK, it's been a trend for some 10, 15 years now that average basket sizes have decreased because customers shop more frequently because there's more availability of groceries. They can get it anywhere, on your way home from work, next to your house, next to your gym. The shops are everywhere, so people shop everywhere. In a lot of the markets where we're in, we're bringing that sort of evolution through the dark stores and through the delivery home as well.
Got it.
So maybe you said a little bit about retail media and touched upon the advertising. Would love to dive into that a little bit more, especially also because I have a personal passion in marketing and advertising. So maybe you can give us some more insights about this. So how relevant is it for your business model on the one side? You also mentioned this before, but just to get some more ideas around this. And also, what types of advertising are we seeing here? Is it flyers that are within the delivery bag where someone is doing advertisement? Or yeah, what type of, what's going on there? Maybe you can just fill in the blank here.
Yeah. Maybe I'll start with a bit of an introduction to retail media because since a couple of years ago, I think it became quite the buzzword in the media industry, now retail media, which is basically advertising directly on retailers' property, on apps, on websites. Amazon, of course, very much leading the charge. They make an insane amount of money through advertising, that being a standalone business unit for them now. But for brands or for the advertisers, being a very interesting new type of media because it's significantly closer to the consumers. In fact, it's one step away from a transaction for their products. They get, from what I hear, much better return on investment of their advertising spend because it is such high intent consumers that they're able to reach. So a very quickly growing aspect of media. Now, we offer all sorts of different things in terms of media. Yes, flyers, yes, sampling, But really, the big aspect is what we call our in-app properties. So either display advertising, we have banners, including shoppable banners. So like a banner with advertising, but with the products directly there. So really drive consumers to action straight away. And also another kind of bucket of advertising that we call product advertising. So boosting the ranking of a product, either in the organic ranking of a subcategory or category within search results or within swim lanes, so wherever an individual product is exposed. We balance this, of course, to make sure our overall customer experience doesn't suffer from advertising. So we want to be showing very relevant advertising to our customers, even, I would say, even interesting advertising that it inspires. And of course, that drives a higher conversion for our advertisers and a higher return on investment for them. It is already a good contributor to our profitability, particularly for both, actually, for the dark store side and for the marketplace side. And we have very good partnerships with the likes of Unilever, Pepsi, Coca-Cola, Nestle, many other, Reckitt, many other big consumer packaged goods companies. We sell their products through the dark stores. We sell their products as a secondhand person from the marketplace model. And we have access to many customers that are exposed to their products and buy their products from us. So it's kind of the perfect match between us and them to use this as an advertising, as a media platform.
Mm, super exciting. So does it go by cost per mil then, kind of like these typical advertising KPIs, or how does it work?
Yeah, either cost per click or cost per mille, depending on the type of asset that we have. We still have some, we're transitioning a little bit and developing our technology as well. We made this public. We partner with CitrusAd as our technology provider for retail media. So we're evolving what sort of assets we offer to, but by and large, product ads are priced on a cost per click basis, and display advertising is either what we call tenancy pricing, so you can get a slot for a period of time, or on a cost per mille basis.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Thank you.
Cool. I think retail media sounds like it's a big contributor, as you said, to your overall profitability now and also in the future. And speaking of the future, I would be interested in how will your business model evolve in the dark store side, on the dark store side, and also on the marketplace side. What's on the roadmap? Give us some insights.
This is the future of retail.
So we still have a few things to make sure our grocery business is running very smoothly. We're currently enabling what you would consider as quite core functionality than most of the supermarkets online offer. We're getting around to actually properly offering, and that is to let our customers choose the exact weight of weightable items that they want to offer, not just in kind of preset, it's only 500 grams and that's what you can get sort of thing. So I think there's a couple of these features that we're still developing that are going to be quite impactful. I would also say we've made really big strides, but we still have quite a bit to improve on the overall shopping experience. So our apps are quite complex, right? You come in as a customer and you can buy pizza or a burger. You can also buy some groceries. You can also buy an iPhone. How do we help customers navigate through that universe in a quick way, right? Because especially for my business, we're quick commerce, but it needs to be a quick shopping experience. For the things that you buy really frequently, it needs to be very seamless how you re-add them to your basket and buy them again. And then we want to inspire you so you discover what else we offer in the assortment, something that's relevant for you as a customer, and you end up adding it to your basket. So I think we still have a challenge there to really improve the shopping experience, to make it a lot more seamless, a lot faster. I am sometimes reticent to say the word faster because we also see customers sometimes spend more than an hour building a basket because they'll add a couple items and then something comes up and they do something else. And then they come back to the app and finish. So even though it's an hour, it's still a relatively quick shopping experience. And while we have really focused on groceries in the past, I think we are starting to think what's the next big category that we want to double down on, and the one after that we want to double down on as well to offer our customers, but offer it in a really seamless way. So we're thinking about that. I think health and beauty, like pharmacy chains, is the next thing that we're focusing on. Flowers is also quite important. So we're picking kind of vertical by vertical. How do we improve the overall experience? I think we will continue with both the dark store model and the marketplace model, because we're trying to really build a marketplace, and we consider our dark stores just a player in the marketplace. Still kind of making sure the portfolio that we have of dark stores is there, the right stores and the right locations, they offer the right assortment and they can really compete in this marketplace, not just because they are ours, so we're propping them, but they can really kind of stand on their own and succeed on their own. But it's the marketplace and it's the variety of options that really attracts customers. So we're definitely going to continue with this model. And then I think we will become where we are and will continue to be a very relevant player for advertisers as well. We're one of the few that have such a global reach, which is quite attractive for the advertisers, because they also don't want to have to deal with 15,000 various retailers that they work with. They want a few scale, sizable platforms where we can talk big investments and big deals and big returns for them as well.
How about if I look at the big supermarkets in the UK, Nectarcard, for example, or Little Plus, or any market, every grocer has a loyalty, or almost every grocer has a loyalty program. I think this calls also for a Delivery Hero loyalty card.
Yeah, so we have subscription programs where, and this is in all of our platforms now, not just for quick commerce, but quick commerce is included, so also for restaurants, where subscribers get various benefits on the platform. We're looking to allow the customers also capture their retailer subscription points or club card points when they shop on our platforms as well. So if you have the Nectar card, and we have, say, we're not in the UK, but if we're partnering with Sainsbury's, you could get Sainsbury's points as well as being a subscriber and getting the benefits that you offer. But subscription is something that we've rolled out pretty much everywhere over the last year, and it's something that our customers are really, really enjoying.
Do you have anything that you were missing that you would like to drop at the end, or are you happy?
Yeah, I think one thing I would like to share as my perspective on the future is that when it comes to grocery shopping in particular, I really see the future as omnichannel. I mentioned earlier that we're still a tiny, tiny player in the grocery industry, in e-commerce, but especially in the grocery industry. And I think we will grow really significantly. I think we'll take a good share, and a still single-digit share of the total grocery industry in the next 5-6 years. But even in the long term, I still see a place for physical stores in providing a different kind of experience. And it's partly why we really like partnering with existing retailers as well. We bring them a new channel. We bring them online sales so they can focus on the offline experience that customers offer. And I do potentially see a future for us also being a technology partner for not just a delivery partner, but really a technology partner for grocery retailers or for other retailers. We're developing a lot of technology to run our own dark stores where we're our own retailer that would be beneficial for these partners too. A bit more on the longer term, but it's something that we're already starting to think about as well.
So like an Ocado of
you're or going like that Instacart. In the UK? Yeah, what Instacart is also doing in the US. I think they're doing some really interesting things and in providing technology for their retail partners, as well as being a delivery platform for those retail partners.
Yeah, that's interesting. I also saw recently Walmart kind of creating Walmart commerce technologies. We're also partnering with them to, I think they have a in-store pick and pack app and staging and those things, which they integrated now in Commerce Cloud. So I think there's some interesting things happening on the market. I need to dive deeper. We need to maybe have another podcast on that, Martin.
So great stuff, Milena. Thanks so much for being our guest today. We're done with our list of questions. So you're off the hook, and it was such a great such a great episode and great insights. And of course, we wish you all the best for the next steps. And we're gonna observe this, of course, and see how it goes. And then happy to come back to this maybe in a year or so, and then see where you guys stand.
Absolutely. It was a real pleasure to be a guest on your show. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks a lot. And then thanks for all the listeners out there tuning in. And we hope you come back for the next episode. Bye-bye.
The Retail Bye-bye. Reality Show with your hosts, Martin and Nino, is presented by Blank and Salesforce. For more information, check out our website, retailrealityshow.com.